4, Genesis 37 through 50 is the chapters that we just read, and it's on Joseph in Egypt. And of course, when they open up this lesson here, it says the narrative of the Old Testament that God is the main character. The accounts after accounts fill the pages of Genesis. And it's about God himself, what God accomplished with his divine purpose and dispersing his grace to the lives of men and women. And so he did that as well here with Joseph. But in Philippians 4, in verse 11, the Apostle Paul here speaking says, not that I speak in respect of want, for I've learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. So start with that verse for the purpose of is that with Joseph, how was he with whatever situation that he was in?
He made the best out of it.
He learned to be content. He learned to be content with whatever state that he was in, whether things were going great for him. He was very content, just like the Apostle Paul. Things wasn't going so great for him, and he was thrown in prison. Same way with the Apostle Paul was thrown in prison. What was said? He learned to be content. Same way with Joseph here. He learned to be content with whatever state that he was in. Do you have a comment, Gary?
We sometimes miss the opportunity because we tend to mope when we get in bad situations and get depressed and down, but we don't look at those as opportunities. See, if Joseph hadn't happened to Joseph, God would not have been able to save his people. He used Joseph to do that. So, you know, Paul, same way. Paul was accomplished a lot in those bad situations. I think sometimes we get in bad situations, instead of looking at what I can do to come out of this and see what good I can do out of that situation, we tend to, you know, be like Jonah and get depressed and mope and whine.
Right. But Joseph here did not, that we could read about in his accounts. He did not do that. And like you said, Carrie, very good point. We sometimes want to mope or complain about a situation that perhaps that we get into. And then it talks about in Genesis 37, the writer here says a dysfunctional family. That's what it talks about. So probably most here can relate to dysfunctional, I guess, in some ways and such at times. But it says that Rachel was Jacob's favorite wife. Their son together, Joseph, was their favorite son. And Jacob shows the favoritism by giving Joseph a coat of many colors when he was 17 years old. And so that causes an issue or a problem within itself as well. I think most here... I'm trying to think of any, but I'm trying to think that most here have multiple children, at least two or more in the family. So what would happen if you chose a favorite? I mean, they all think that there is a favorite when there's multiple children. That's for certain. They, you know.
We saw with Jacob and Esau.
Exactly. It happened with Jacob and Esau, then here with Joseph and his brothers. What did it cause with them?
Yep. Resentment, anger, all those emotions.
Right.
We get as humans.
And so they were already jealous of him, Joseph and his ten of his brothers, and one was too young. It talks about that. But not only just jealous, but they became bitter. They despised him. They began to actually hate him and wish death upon him. And so when you look at it that way, you know, that they're despising some, one or wishing death upon him, you know, you got to think of what type of jealousy is that that took over? Is that the type of love that we are taught in the Bible? And this lesson, I guess, more so than the previous lessons, I think that we can apply more so to our lives than some of the other lessons that we've already gone over. And the reason is because, you know, there is jealousy here. There is anger, there is bitter, there is hate. And the reason why of all of that, and we could read about it, was, you know, there was a favorite. And of course, you know, throughout life, you know, Joseph, he could have looked at this differently than what he did. And so when he did look at this the way that he did he look at it that God was punishing him? Never, he was thrown in prison for something that, and accused of something he didn't do. You know, for example, as well, that we'll be discussing a little bit later on. But here it says that Joseph's 10 brothers hate him even more when he tells them that he had a dream that they all bowed down to him. Could you imagine their face, their emotions then? They already hated him. They was already jealous because they knew that he was the favorite son of all of them. And then he goes in Genesis 37, verses 5 through 11. It says, "And Joseph dreamed a dream and told it to his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. And he said unto them, Hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. For behold, we are binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. And behold, your sheaf stood round about and made obstinance in the sheaf. And the brethren said to him, Shalt thou indeed reign over us? Or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us? And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. And he dreamed yet another dream and told his brethren that he said, Behold, I have dreamed a dream more. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obstinance to me. And he told it to his father and to his brethren. And his father rebuked him. And said unto him, What is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and my mother and thy brother indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee to the earth? And his brother envied him, but his father observed the saying. And so with this in mind, he was already the favorite. His father already gave him a coat of many colors, which was significant within itself. And then he tells them that he had a dream that they all bowed down to him. So you can imagine the surprise on their faces whenever they said that, or the look on their faces whenever he told them that this would happen. But later Joseph becomes looking for them. They strip him of his garment, throw him into a pit, and threaten to kill him. And in Genesis 37, 18 through 20 says, And when they saw him afar off, even before he came nearer to them, they conspired against him to slay him. And they said one to another, Behold, the dreamer cometh. Come now, therefore, and let us slay him, and cast him into the pit, and we will say, Some evil beast hath devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams. And so here, they were making fun of Joseph. They were making fun of his dreams as well. When it says, They saw him even afar off, and they called him the dreamer, was afar off. So they were referring back to the dream that he had here, making light of that situation or making fun of the situation. But they had a plan. They had a plan where they would not bow before him, and that plan was to slay him or to kill him. But as we know, that did not take place, for they ended up selling him instead as a slave. And I guess to them, they thought that would be worse than just killing him and getting it over with, that if he was sold as a slave, perhaps, that would be more of a punishment to him than just being slayed. And so again, Joseph here was sold to slavery. He was not killed. The brothers went back and told their father, took his garments with him that was covered in blood. And so his father assumed for the next 20 years or so there that he was murdered, or that he was killed by an animal, to say the least. And then we get into Genesis, first of all, any comments or questions there? Then we get into Genesis 39 through 41. And this is where it says that Joseph's life became a roller coaster ride of ups and downs. But every time he reached a new low, he made the most of the situation and rose to the occasion. So without, you know, raising their hands, but who here has had that, whether it was at their job, things were going all good and well and great, no problems, no issues, then boom, something happens. And perhaps it's not going as well as what it once was. Or perhaps in your own personal life, whether it's with your marriage or your relationship with your children, everything's going great. Nothing could be better. Then boom, everything falls apart. Has that ever happened to anyone? And if it has, what usually is our response to that? Exactly. Why me? Why is this happening to me? Why hadn't this happened to so-and-so? I don't ever see anything bad happen to this family or that family. Why does this always happen to me? And so we get into that. But the thing is, we don't always know what's going on within a family, with someone's job or work or whatever the situation might be. So you don't know sometimes if they've been there or not. But as God's children, we should rely upon each other and do that. But more importantly, who did Joseph rely upon? God. Who else was there with him as far as family-wise or whatever, with him to help build him up? No one. He relied on one. Exactly. That's all he needed. That should be all that we need when we rely upon him in the right way. And so it says that it was a roller coaster ride for him with many ups and downs. And every time he reached a new low, he made the most of the situation and he rose to that occasion. He didn't let it get him down. And the handiwork of the hand of God is apparent every turn. And in Acts 7, it talks of that here. In Acts 7, verses 9 and 10. And the patriarchs moved with envy and Joseph into Egypt, but God was with him and delivered him out of his afflictions and gave him favor and wisdom in the sight of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And he made him governor over Egypt and all his house. So he relied upon one. That's all that he needed, because he didn't have other family there with him. His family, his brothers hated him. They sold him to slavery, hoping that that would be more miserable than just killing him. But in this situation, he relied upon God and talks about the handiwork of God here. And how oftentimes do we sit back and think that we are in control? That we're the ones that is controlling the situation. That we're the ones Whether it went good, we give ourselves the credit. If it went bad, it was someone else's fault. You ever been in a situation with children fighting, for example? And you have two of them there. Does each one take blame for themselves? Usually not. Do what? Yep, exactly. It's the other one's fault. It's never that one's fault at all. However, you know, and Zach probably doesn't like me telling stories, but I do anyway. But for 12, almost 13 years of his life, he was an only child. And so if something was wrong and broken or whatever it was, then he had no choice than to take the blame for it in that situation. But with Addie and Levi, on the other hand, Levi, honestly, he'll take the blame because he just wants to go ahead and go on with life. So just give me the spanking, give me the punishment, whatever the punishment is, just go ahead, I'll take all the blame. And Addie, she's scared to death of a spanking or a punishment, so she doesn't want to take any blame at all. For the most part, children, they don't want to take the blame for their own actions. And we as adults don't want to do that as well, whether it's in their job as well. Everything was going great, and then boom, something happens. It's not going so great. And so, you know, with me at work, managed three different branches of the seven, and I could easily say, well, I wasn't there, but that took place. I don't know what they did. And but instead, you had to take the good with the bad with that. So, for example, this past week at work, things were going great. One of the branches, everything was going well, but then there was a huge misunderstanding between a branch manager and one of our members. And it was over $2,700 worth of charges and fees and everything. So they had a round. And so all went great until that happened. And then my boss called and says, what's going on? I'm like, I don't know, but I will find out. Because I hadn't even been made aware of the situation at this point in time. But when I did, we got the problem resolved and got it taken care of. But I didn't blame the other branch manager for it. What I said was, obviously, I failed somewhere, didn't train this person how to take care of a situation when this took place. But now we know, moving forward, what the plan is and how we can avoid this from happening again. And, of course, they said, well, what about the member? The member is very happy because I give $2,700 worth of fees back. And then they said, well, how did that help the credit union? I said, well, because we kept our reputation. We gave the member the $2,700 back. They've been with us for 37 years. So why not do that and keep the member whenever they had over $1 million with us? Then the manager said, my manager told me, said, well, then you all did do the right thing. I said, well, it wasn't just me, but XYZ assisted in this. And so this is the lesson that we learned. But oftentimes, we want to blame someone else for the situation. But when something goes good, we want to take the credit for it as well. But with here, with something, when things went great for Joseph, who did he give the credit to? God. He always gives credit to God. And again, to make it applicable to our lives, you know, we sometimes, when things are going great, it's look what I've done, look what we've done, or look what I accomplished here, instead of giving God the credit. And everything that we do, we ought to do that. But in Genesis 39, just because God was with Joseph, everything he touched was successful. Because Joseph relied upon God. He didn't rely upon himself. He didn't rely upon others. And people took notice of this, including Potiphar, and was brought, who bought Joseph as a slave. till Potiphar bought him as a slave. But then now, Joseph was running this powerful Egyptian entire state. He's second in command to Joseph, or to Potiphar. And so with that in mind as well, then apparently to look upon him, he was an attractive guy as well. And Potiphar's wife saw that as well. And, you know, and oftentimes in life that we see things and it don't have to be another person, but someone's got a nicer house, a better car, a better job, whatever the situation is, and want to look at it that we want that same thing as well. And sometimes people go after the wrong things in life. But with Potiphar's wife, she also noticed Joseph for who he was. And she was attracted to him. And so she attempted to seduce him, but he told her no. And in Genesis 39:9, "There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife." That was the only thing that was kept from him, was Potiphar's wife. Everything else, Joseph had access to. And then he says, "Then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" And so with that thought in mind, how do we look at things in this world that we do see, think, and want? Do we view things the way that Joseph did here?
We should.
I think, at least, I could be wrong. So older people that are people with more experience than me may know better. But I think we tend to measure things by how it affects other people rather than how it affects God. So, for example, murder is considered awful in America because you murdered somebody and because it affects that person's life and the families and all that. But yet, abortion is okay by the standard of whatever. Lying is okay because it's not that big of a deal. Stealing is okay. I mean, we put a hierarchy of what's wrong, but right. To God, it's the same. And I think that's how if we're not careful, we can get in that same mindset of, you know, that there's a hierarchy of wrong, and it's all wrong to God, and we got to do our best to control our behavior, whether it's something that humans consider severe, or I should say our culture considers severe, versus, because every culture has stuff that's a different priority. But I think if you look at this, he said, and he didn't say sin against, you know, Potiphar, he said sin against God. So right. That was his focus, and I think maybe at least at times we can lose track of that. That it's against God. It's not against our other man. It's against God.
Right. It is against God. And so what's trouble is categorizing sin, basically. We want to do that at times. Kerry?
Well, I was going to say, too, that when you look at this, you know, first of all, you seek to please God first, right? But also you have a responsibility to your fellow man. So Joseph, even though he put God first, which he should have, said, "I cannot sin against God," but he also shouldn't sin against his fellow man.
Right.
Because the Ten Commandments covered laws that were against God and laws that were against his fellow man. So if you love your neighbor as yourself, you're not going to take your neighbor's wife or your neighbor's husband.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
That was the first thing that he told her, wasn't it?
Exactly.
"There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but you." And then he says, so he told her no. And he says, how then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And I think that Kevin, you know, was talking about categorizing a sin. That's sometimes how we want to do that. And we don't sometimes look at things being sinful when it is. So, for example, husbands, you don't have to answer this question out loud, but your wife goes to get a new hairdo. And they come home. They say, you like my new hairdo? And you absolutely hate it. You really can't stand it that much. Whether it was the color that they put on it or the shortness or the length of it or whatever it is, you really don't like it. So do we husbands say, yeah, it's beautiful? Is that what we should say? If it's not the truth, then we shouldn't say it, right? But again, it's us categorizing sin. That's just a little white lie. Right, that's just that little white lie. So we don't need to do that. And again, you know, Joseph here said, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And we need to ask ourselves that a lot. And we want to say, well, that's maybe not, that example I used there, maybe we're not looking at that as being wicked, but it's a lie nonetheless. And there's many other. Right. And but we have to look at what is sin and stop categorizing that sin. Karen?
Some of that comes from the Catholic Church because, you know, they have mortal sin and right. They have different, like, things of sin. You know, one's worse than the other.
Right, yeah, the one is worse than the other. They didn't do that.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say something else I was going to say a minute ago, but when you look at sin, you know, the wages of sin is death, right? So this sin that, you know, you didn't want to sin against God, but also sinning against Potiphar's wife by committing adultery, that has second and third order effects. So sometimes we don't really see the consequences of sin. That's really why God doesn't want us to sin, because we don't see the destructive nature of it and how it impacts not only yourself from a spiritual standpoint and a mental standpoint as well, but also other people. So committing adultery has its wide impact, right?
Right.
Destroys other families. It has a long-term impact on the children of those families, too.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it hurts more than just the one family there. With that,
she grabs him by his garment and begs him to sleep with her. And he runs out of the house, leaving his garment in her hand. So then she lies to her husband and tells Potiphar that Joseph tried to rape her. So as furious as he is, Potiphar doesn't put Joseph to death because of what Potiphar is or what Joseph has done, but instead sends him to in prison. For that, and because he believed his wife that lied over that. And so then in Genesis 40, it talks a bit about Joseph's life in prison. But again, Joseph did not sit there and wallow in self-pity and think, I'm here because someone lied about me. And sometimes we want to do that as well. We want to sit and think about what the other person done, why they done it, and not understanding why, versus on with what Joseph did here. What did he do? First of all, he relied upon God again. That was his first thing that he did, but then he moved on with his life. He didn't sit there and lie in self-pity or think about of a way that he can get back vengeance on Potiphar's wife. And sometimes that's what we want to do, is sit back and think about, well, I'll get even with them someday. I will get even with them one day. They'll pay for what they did one day. And so we need to keep that in mind as well, that he did not. Instead, he accepted the situation. Goes back to the first verse that I read of Philippians 4, verse 11. He learned to be content in the situation that he was in, like the Apostle Paul did there. You have a comment?
Yeah, Christ is our life. If we focused more, we wouldn't think that way, because I know when I was younger, I would think that way. And now I look back and I see it wasted my life.
Yeah, waste your time, waste part of your life.
And it takes your happiness away when you do that. It truly does. It's a good point there. So one day he was joined in prison by Pharaoh's chief cupbearer and his baker, who needed dreams to be interpreted for them. So the so Joseph told him, so the cupbearer would soon be restored to Pharaoh's service, and Joseph asked him to help for his help to get him out of prison. It says, for I, in Genesis 40, verse 15, it says, for I was indeed stolen out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also I have done nothing that they should put me into the pit. And so he wasn't complaining, but he was asking for help in that, because he helped interpret their dreams. So in turn, he was asking for a favor, basically, with that. In Genesis 41, 2 years later, then the cupbearer would remember Joseph's request about helping him to get out of the pit or to get out of prison here, but it did take 2 years. So we do know that, he spent 2 years of his life in prison. But again, Joseph didn't sit there and think about what he could do to get even, but rather serve God during that time frame. And so sometimes in life, whenever we're going through something difficult, and for whatever reason, I've never understood, but you can always tell if a couple's having problems or family are having problems, because what's one of the very first thing that they cut out? Right. Service to God. And then they say and claim that, they're not putting God out of their life, but they do. But Joseph here, he put God first in his life. He put God first and he worshiped God, because he learned to be content in whatever state he was in, and we need to do that as well. Whenever something's not going right for us, that's not the time to then go away from God, but it's the time to lean upon him even more. And that's been my, now, granted, you know, I'm 50 now, but years and years ago, you know, if Teresa and I had a spat that morning for church, I'd be like, you just going to church, I ain't going with you because I don't want to sit by you. I remember telling her that one time, and she looked at me and she said, what's wrong with you? I said, I don't know, you made me mad. So, but we, you know, of course, made up prior to and went on. But then, you know, and I would say it's fair to say that every single person here at some point in your life, whether you was a young Christian, perhaps an older Christian in your life, that if things weren't going well, you just didn't feel like going to church. You just didn't feel like going. Perhaps you went anyway, but you still didn't want to be there. And so how does that affect your relationship with God then?
We don't go to church for us. Exactly. Why do we go?
We go to worship God.
Yeah, I was going to say too, it's human nature. We have to understand our nature in the flesh versus our nature in the spirit. Our nature in the flesh is natural to want to withdraw yourself from God or from your fellow Christians or your family members or whoever, because when you're in darkness, the darkness and the light can't coexist with one another.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Because the light exposes my darkness.
Right.
And then when that happens, I guess what I do, I don't want to be in the light. I don't want to compete against the light, so I pull myself away and withdraw myself. That's just human nature.
Be alone and not worry about it.
Yeah, it's like Adam and Eve. They tried to hide in the garden. Cain tried to hide from God. And if you look at everybody's sin, David ran for a while before he was confronted. It's just human nature. When you sin, you try to hide it.
Right. So with Joseph,
even during his lowest points in life, he relied on God. Even during the best situations in his life, he relied upon God all the time. Whether it was good, whether it was bad, he relied upon God the entire time. So this,
he didn't point the finger at her for a situation either.
No.
You know, it's just very interesting, you know, because I would have probably, you know, what would I have done? I went and spilled the beans, you know.
Exactly.
I defend myself.
Favor, I would say, this is what your wife does. She's got my, if you don't believe me, she has
my cloth or whatever it was that, you know, that she took off of him. Apparently he didn't do that. So, but yeah, that is very interesting that he did not do that, and he did not, again, blame someone else as well there. Any other comments or questions there? Okay. So then after then Pharaoh had a dream, and then that's when the cupbearer remembered Joseph doing that. And so then it talks about that Pharaoh dreamed that along the banks of the Nile River, seven lean cows were gobbled up with seven fat cows. Instead of becoming fat, the cows remained lean and skinny and even sickly. And Pharaoh also had a similar dream, the stalks of grain, seven healthy and seven withered. And what could it mean? And so he went to, so the cupbearer told him that Joseph interpreted their dreams a couple of years prior to that were true, and that those dreams were true. And so then the cupbearer then remembered, said, I remember a young Hebrew was there who was in prison with us that interpreted the dreams. Of course, Pharaoh knew then who that was. And so the dream was interpreted by Joseph, as we know, and talking about the famine and the 7 years of plenty and the 7 years of famine there, and what to do. And not only did he interpret the dreams, but he also told Pharaoh what to do so that he would be able to survive the 7 years that were not going to be so great. So then Pharaoh brought Joseph back into the realms of things. But then you got to think, 2 years he sat in prison, basically wasting away, not being used for anything at all. But yet Joseph relied upon God. For 2 years he was in prison. And we think that we can't get through a bad situation if it's 2 hours long, or 2 days long, or 2 weeks long, or 2 months. But this was 2 years that he was in prison, and that he relied upon God. And no words in here did it say that he lost his faith. Sister Kathy?
I was just thinking about, but even those 2 years, I kind of see them as a kind of a Romans 8:28. God used those 2 years for good, because the jailer put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners. And through that, Joseph no doubt learned a lot of managerial skills, and skills that then God put to use when this famine came and he was in charge of everything. So God was grooming him, even in that situation.
Right, but even, and you're right.
And I think that Joseph knew that. He knew that God was using him to do that. And then even though he was still in prison, he was at the bottom of the totem pole in prison, but yet he relied upon God for those 2 years. And would we do the same? Or would we just roll around in self-pity over that? And so again, Joseph then got back out, became second in command to Pharaoh once again, and was doing what the plan that he had told Pharaoh that needed to be done and taken care of. And so, and then I can't help but think here, how many of us would go back to someone who did us wrong and do this such good thing for them?
Not many. Right. You know, Pharaoh threw him in prison.
Although he was successful, I guess, in a way you could say that, in prison, right? But still, Pharaoh threw him in prison for those 2 years. But now what is Joseph doing for Pharaoh? Right. He's saving his livelihood, his riches, his wealth, his kingdom, basically, is what Joseph is saving for Pharaoh. And oftentimes we'd be like, we just want to get even back, you know, get back even with that person. But Joseph, as Kathy pointed out, had to have known that God was grooming him for what was to come. For what was to come. And then, says then one day, out of the blue, his past caught up to him. During the 7 years of famine, people came from all over the world and came to Egypt to buy their grain. And 2 years into famine, 10 men came to buy grain who looked very familiar to Joseph, and they were his brothers. When he sees them, Joseph remains completely in control of the situation. He recognizes them, but they did not recognize him for the last 20 years of his life. He was with the Egyptians, so he talked like them, dressed like them, and all. And so, and since with any thoughts of vengeance set aside, Joseph must determine if his brothers have changed over the past 2 decades before revealing himself to him. And so, he wasn't looking at vengeance. The account of that in Genesis 42, I think it is that he did not look at vengeance at all towards his brothers. He set that aside. They sold him to slavery, was going to kill him, but they sold him because they thought that could be possibly worse than killing him. And so they sold him to slavery, but yet, I know our time is running out here, but yet whenever he finally confronted them, and he let them know after they did bow down to him and let them know that he was their brother, Joseph, then they remembered that dream and that he was doing what then for them? Instead of getting vengeance, what did he do? He what? He saved them. Same way he did with Pharaoh. His brothers did him wrong. He didn't seek out to get vengeance on them. Pharaoh did him wrong. He didn't set out to get vengeance on them, on him. Instead, he saved Pharaoh and his kingdom. He saved his brothers. And how often would we want to look at, I'm going to get even rather than looking at what can I do to help instead of vengeance on them. So thank you all for your comments this morning.